freue mich, dass du da bist, hier bei 1000 First Steps, deinem Podcast für das Größte in dir. Mein Name ist Jakob Horvath und meine Vision mit diesem Podcast ist es, dir Menschen und Erfahrungen und Geschichten näher zu bringen, die dir Mut machen zum Leben. Und zwar zu dem Leben, das du dir von Herzen wünschst. Die dich einen Schritt weiterbringen auf deinem ganz authentischen Weg zu deiner großartigsten Version, eben zum Größten in dir. Und als ich im Februar in Bali war, ist mir ein ganz besonderer Mensch begegnet, der mich zutiefst inspiriert hat. Und zwar durch die Art, wie er sein eigenes Leben lebt. Ganz ungewöhnlich. Ganz weit weg von dem, was man bei uns als normal bezeichnen würde. Naturverbunden, in sich ruhend und im Einklang mit sich und seiner Umgebung. Als ich Kita Kasinic zum ersten Mal gesehen habe, ist er auf der Wiese in der Sonne gesessen, vor dem Shala, dem großen Saal, in dem unser Meditation Teacher Training stattgefunden hat, 3 Wochen lang. Und er hat dort gewartet, bis wir mit unserer Session fertig waren, denn Kita war als Gast eingeladen, um Musik zu spielen. Aber ein bisschen treffender formuliert, um uns das Geschenk seines Sound Healings zu machen. Eine besondere Form der Meditation, bei der ganz unterschiedliche Arten von Tönen und Geräuschen und Musik und verschiedenen Mantren eine unglaubliche, friedliche, harmonische und wunderschöne Stimmung in dir erzeugen. Und seine Musik hat mich im Herzen berührt, so sehr, dass ich ein paar Mal Tränen in den Augen gehabt habe. Ich finde sein ganzes Wesen so inspirierend, die Art, wie er spricht, wie aufmerksam er einen Raum beobachtet. Seine ganze Präsenz strahlt eine unheimliche Ruhe aus, eine Harmonie. Und ich hoffe sehr, das folgende Gespräch bringt dir ein wenig näher, was ich meine. Lass mir gern auf Instagram deine Gedanken da zur Folge @jakob.horvath und wenn dich die heutige Episode einen Schritt weiterbringt auf deinem Weg hin zur Entfaltung dieser wunderschönen und einzigartigen Musik in dir, dann freue ich mich natürlich sehr, wenn du sie auch mit deinen Freunden teilst. Danke, dass du hier dabei bist und zuhörst und jetzt freue ich mich sehr darauf, dir Kita heute im Podcast vorstellen zu dürfen. Viel Vergnügen mit dem Interview.
Welcome to the podcast, Kita. Thank you so much. So happy to have you here. Very grateful for your time that you're taking here in your beautiful space close to Ubud in Bali. We met the other day at the Yogis Garden at the meditation teacher training that I was attending. You're a very dear, beloved friend of Punu, the meditation teacher, who was leading the training. And you were doing the sound healing. And I felt so much resonance to your music. To me, it was a bit like as if you were expressing yourself, your deepest truth through the music. It was so beautiful. So I'd love to talk with you a little bit more about what music means to you, about the spirit of your instruments, how you express yourself through it. But let's start with talking a little bit about who is Kita. How would you describe yourself to those not knowing you? Which journey are you on?
For me, Kita is a human being that is in a physical form, living an experience that myself as consciousness is able to watch. And I've spent many years as I've grown and developed and from a child to learning what it's to be in an older body as an adult to from many years of identifying with who I thought Kita had to be or what it meant to be a man or what it meant to be associated with any country or with any label or what it meant to be strong or courageous or successful or beautiful, all these things, to where I realized that that's really the antithesis of what it means to experience life of humanity through the eyes of a being It's kind of like, I feel like this is a rental body. I'm in a rental car. And a lot of times in rental cars, we say it's a rental, so we drive it off-road and do whatever we want to do and just kind of leave the car at the end, but we...
Not taking care of it.
And not taking care of it, but this vessel, this temple, this physical body is like the most precious thing that we have in this life. And it has an expiration date. It's going to expire someday and it's going to return back to the earth. So more and more I'm learning to honor and respect what the body wants and what the mind wants. And sometimes through identifying through any specific definition of what it means to be Kita, then I go into a strategic aspect of having to live out what it means to be Kita. Mm-hmm. And the more that I mature in this body, the more I'm learning to just witness the experience that happens as an experience, as it comes forth, and staying open to receive all that's coming versus trying to guide myself in a particular direction.
Was that a constant development, or has there been some turning point, some very specific milestones that you can recall that have made you really go through that shift?
Well, I think there's been all kinds of experience and milestones of life showing me what works and what doesn't work, through relationships, through having children. And I think a big part for me was my experience of having children and the condition of what I thought that meant to have children and to raise them, of how I thought they needed to be. And the more that my children have grown up and become adults, and I've learned to see them as people and not as my children who I'm training to be something, I'm learning the value of what it means to just support and guide them to be on their journey to the fullest without having to mold them into a specific thing that I thought that they needed to be, which helped me understand a lot about myself and my own parental conditioning as a child and who I thought I had to be for my parents versus who I have grown to be, maybe not in spite of them, but aside from their visions of who I needed to be for them. Mm-hmm. And so recognizing how much that is a kind of a global condition of us growing up in the shadow of two beings that came together and brought us into life to fully embody this life as a human versus living in a box of a conditioned set of rules of who we're supposed to be.
Mm. How old are your children?
25, 22, and 13.
So you've been through the process with them.
I have been through the process with them, for sure.
Wow. What has it taught you about yourself? It sounds very conscious, like the conscious parenting, allowing your kids to be themselves, allowing them to make their own experiences, give them the freedom and the space to, as you call it, fully embody what life means to them instead of putting rules and conditions on them. But to me, it sounds like this requires a lot of consciousness, conscious parenting, really not tapping into this fear of, oh, I need to take care of my kids because they don't know for themselves what is good for them. Mm. How was that journey like?
I think a lot of it is like getting over our own ego and bullshit about our children reflecting to the world who we are. If our children don't turn out a certain way, then it reflects back on us how we were as parents. And if we don't show them a certain way or they don't look a certain way to society, then it means that we didn't do our job correctly. Mm-hmm. And especially as children grow older and start to face the realities of life and the potential sufferings and maybe even life-threatening situations that bring fear to you as a parent, like that my child is not going to make it in this world, or that they're not going to survive a certain way, or they're not going to have a status that we think is acceptable, then somehow we feel like that's going to reflect on us versus the selflessness of understanding that each being needs to experience life and the hardships and the challenges exactly as they are to bring them strength themselves.
Right.
We think that we can save them from something by telling them what worked for us and what didn't work for us, and if they don't do it that way, then they're never going to learn. But the reality of what I've experienced is that each of us has to learn a specific way in order to find our path.
Yeah.
Or else we just continue on somebody else's path.
Yeah. And you have found your path, it seems. And you've been through many different... You grew up in the States. I think you were born in California and then lived in Arizona.
Correct.
For a long time.
Correct.
And you've also shared with me that you lived in South America, in Peru and in Brazil. Can you take us back a little bit on this, how you were embarking on your journey, on your path that you are on now, and what were the most significant milestones, countries, places, people?
When I grew up in a family of mother and father who separated when I was at a young age, three years old. And I lived for a majority of my childhood with my mother, who started to live a very alternative lifestyle, was getting into health consciousness when I was a very young age, and my father had very different ideals and viewpoints in life where he didn't agree, and so there was a conflict in how they were raising me. And at an age of about 12 years old, my mother decided to kind of really embody more of the freedom lifestyle and to take off on the road to travel. She wanted to travel more, and she was kind of extracting herself from the homogenized corporate machine world of being involved in that continual process. And she gave me kind of a choice at that point to continue to live with her in that way and to travel with her on the road, which to me at that point meant not being in school with friends and being kind of in a non-consistent lifestyle traveling, or to go live with my father and to continue in school and to be kind of on that side of the fence. And at that point I chose to live with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went into a more conventional way of education and going to high school, continuing on, and it was in a different city, and you know, the complete different way of values. But it was my choice because I felt that that's what I needed at that time, and I hadn't been with my father.
How old were you at that time?
12.
Yeah. 12.
And so at that point, I went through that system and went to school, and at the end of that period of time I kind of had a more conditioned set of values of what it meant to be a man from living up to 12 years old from a very feminine, soft, expansive point of view to a very strict and rigid, mental-oriented view of what it meant to be a man. And at the end of that point, I was 17 years old, and I didn't see my mother that often, but she was traveling around and she came to visit. And I had decided to make a very big change in my life, and I invited my mother to come so I could share that with her. And I asked her to come to my house, and we had a piano. And I played her a very beautiful, long, just improvisational piano piece. And I turned to look at her to see this glowing mother, just very proud of, like, wow, this is so beautiful. And I said, Mom, I decided to join the Marine Corps.
Wow.
And tears came down her eyes, and she was like, it was the moment of feeling so ecstatic for the expression of your child to what I can only imagine now was like the biggest antithesis to what you think your child will do and the possibility of losing him in, to the military.
Especially so for somebody who was traveling that often and experienced a whole different way of living.
Correct. Yeah. And it was kind of, it was very symbolic of the different archetypes that each one of them represented in my life.
Each one of your parents?
Each one of my parents. Yeah. And I was like, I was exuding this conditioned state of living with my father and what it meant to be disciplined mm-hmm. and to be a strong man and what it was acceptable and... And so I joined the military, and it didn't take me a very long time to realize it wasn't the path for me, but I think I was really trying to prove something a lot to myself as well as to my father that I could do it and that I was a strong man. And and in this process, I learned the fallacy of all of those beliefs of what I thought I was doing, and I learned the construct behind the military-industrial complex and what it meant. And I had this belief system because I had very many male archetypes in my life that had been in the military, and there was a lot of prestige around that. There was a lot of like perceived honor that mm-hmm. I thought that meant, and I thought that that's what I was striving for because
that's what you need.
It was my male role model, yeah. And it was who I looked to mm-hmm. think that that's what it meant to be a man.
Yeah.
And at my graduation process in the military, my grandfather was a general, my father was a captain, and so I had all this like. I thought, wow, so cool, and all my friends that were in the military with me is like, yeah, that's my grandfather, it's my father, and I'm going to follow in these footsteps. And anyway, it went on to a journey of, after that point, of realizing what wrong of a place I was in. Mm. And I was seeing the suffering that the choice that I made had was bringing to the rest of the world. And at a point where I thought that I was doing something that was in honor and protecting my family and the freedom of my country was actually robbing and stealing those very same values from every other country that the military touched. Mm-hmm. And so that process for me, going through that process, helped me understand and... At the end of that process, I got out of the military and ran to my mother. And she was living in Arizona at the time, and she was living in the middle of nature and the middle of the woods. And so I went in and lived and stayed with her and kind of decompressed all of that conditioning for quite some time, and then began learning from her the journey of returning back to the earth, because she was very earth-oriented and very connected to the fire, the indigenous ways of the native peoples of the land. And she introduced me even more to a different way of life.
Yeah. And that's the way of life that you're now radiating in such a vibrant way. Mm. Through your music, it seems, without knowing you very well. But I feel I know you better then I would normally know somebody who I, you know, hadn't been in touch that long through your music, because you expressed it in such a deep way. So what does music mean to you, and how, well, that is two questions in one now. Let's start with that one. What does music mean to you?
Music is, I think everything is music. We live in a life that is simply frequency and vibration, from the smallest cell in our body to when we turn on a song. But each song within our cell, within our DNA, is expressing life, and it's expressing life through frequency or vibration. And it's like we can listen to a death metal song and we can feel the frequency and vibration of that song, and we can listen to a symphony of Bach or Beethoven and listen to the frequency of that, or we can listen to a monk chanting the Vedic scriptures from thousands of years ago and listen to the frequency of that. And so each bit of language that we experience, like these words that I'm sharing now, they hold a certain value, but it's ultimately a frequency coming from the being expressed. And my expression of music is, I came to a very critical point in my life where I was trying to play music for a long time, and I would hear a certain piece of music and I would try to replicate or play what that sounded like to me. And at a certain point of life, I received a message that to allow the music to play me, and that ultimately I am the instrument. I am the instrument of life. And the more that I allow life to flow through me and let music play me as the instrument, then whatever I touch and whatever I express through that becomes my prayer of creation.
Wow. Wow. That is so inspiring. I mean, you shared that also in the sound healing at the teacher training when you said, you know, we often try to replicate the voices of those who are there, like, let's say, pop stars. You want to learn a song and then you try to sound like them. You will ultimately fail because you are a different person, a different individual. And you have a different story to tell, and you said it's all about finding your own voice. How do you find your own voice?
Well, I think that, I don't know if we, you know, when we hear a certain singer that, I think this is the way inspiration in general works, we hear something in the world that touches something inside of us that makes us feel more light or more inspired to live or more joy. And naturally, our emulative, our desire to replicate that feeling comes forth. So we want to sound, or we want to attract something very similar to that. So the same with any teaching that we find in life. We hear a teaching that inspired us, that helped us on our path. So the first thing that we think that we need to do with our mind is to do what that person was doing in order to achieve this certain state. But simply what it usually is just an inspirational value that is, it's like the provocation of the other person's spirit that is just inspiring our spirit to do the same. Not necessarily in the same way or the same sound or the same form, but it's just, it's like, wow, we see that spirit flying, so we know our spirit can do the same thing, so we want to do it. And finding our own voice is recognizing the uniqueness of what we have to offer that is not like anything else in the world. It doesn't exist anywhere on the planet. And having the courage to stand forth without having the shame of standing separate in the crowd. We often move in a kind of herd consciousness, as many sheep following a shepherd, and go that way and follow this way. And we have stories in our life that don't want to look like the black sheep, because the black sheep is the one that stands separate, that everybody looks at and talks about. And
yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's usually the black sheep that goes a certain way that people or the other sheep try to understand why he's going that certain way, but he's happy living that certain way, so they end up coming to him after and saying, what are you doing? What is it that you're doing that you feel so comfortable being in your own void, in your own space? And it's just simple inspiration. It's the comfortability of being in this body, being willing to stand aside of the crowd and not needing everybody else's acceptance to continue on. So it's like when we find our voice, that our voice wants to express itself just for the mere fact of expressing itself, versus the place that needs appreciation or acceptance or or applause from someone else for being what it is.
Yeah. First thing that comes to mind is that fear of not being good enough. I think a feeling that so many people have, for whatever reason, maybe it's their upbringing, it's the way they've been treated in school, competing from a very young age with others for the better grades, for the acceptance of the teachers and the parents. And it's kind of immanent to our system. It seems that it's bringing forth this fear of not being good enough. And I think that is, in my opinion, that is one of the main burdens that keep us from expressing our true nature, or to like first discovering the true nature, being courageous to look for it, and then expressing it. Because, as you said, it's always this feeling of, I need the approval of others, I need the acceptance, otherwise I'm a nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any practical advices or something that helped you on your journey to overcome that fear and to really stand up for, speak your own truth and stand up for what you really believe is true?
Well, I think a lot of it comes back to this turning point that I had in the military, and coming from this place of feeling that discipline and conforming to a group consciousness was the way to go. And what I learned on the other side of that was there's a fine line of what it means to love ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily looking in the mirror and saying, I love how you look and I love all these things, but it's like loving what it means to be this embodiment. And loving ourselves first, before we need the love of others to fill that hole. And this is the fundamental element of healing, when we look for healing in life. And what it means to heal is to be whole, and to feel whole within ourselves, within the own silence of our own void, within our own mind chatter, within our own acceptance of ourselves. And the place that when we can accept ourselves, we no longer need acceptance from others. We no longer need the approval of others, because we have everything we need right here. And if there's any specific place and time of that I learned that, or that helped me really embody that, is just step by step looking at what happened when I didn't have a specific outcome of what I think I needed to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
When I just surrendered to what life was bringing me and was able to not commit to others, just because if I didn't, then they were going to think something bad of me. Or I grew up in a world that, you know, that everyone was telling me, well, you have to stick to this way, and you have mm-hmm. to look at that, and if you're going to accomplish anything in life, then you have to like stay focused, have goals, set right. this and that. And I tried that for a long time, and I lived semi-successfully in that, like ability to have the goals and to set and achieve them. But at the end of the day, I didn't have that inspiration of spirit that I was speaking of. My spirit was saying, come on, fuck this, break out of this box, you need to break these chains. Yeah. There's something more than this box that you're living in.
What is that more? How would you describe that? Where you get this inspiration from?
The more is just the mind has its way of constructing its pictures based only on what other things have told it. And when we allow life to happen versus trying to guide ourselves into a specific version or way that life is supposed to look, then it becomes even so much more than what the imagination can conceive. And then it just continues opening every time that you wake up and you have no idea what's going to happen. Yeah. You just see what's going to happen, what comes, and somebody asks you a question of what you're going to do the next day, and you say, let's see, I don't know, let's see what happens. And it just enables so much more possibility to occur versus going through life and thinking it has to look a certain way, and if it doesn't look that way, then you start to hold tension and stress and become more in dis-ease, out of ease.
Right. That... I forgot the question that I wanted to ask. Give me a second. Yeah. Do you have any goals? Do you have like something like a bigger vision? Because I always feel like nowadays everybody's talking about, you know, big visions, and you need to know your why and your purpose of life, and you need to, you know, do certain steps in order to make that a reality. And I think that stresses out a lot of people because they just don't know yet. Life hasn't unfolded for them in that certain way, maybe. And then they think, oh, but I need to know, and I don't know my why yet, and now I'm already in the, you know, mid of my 20s. And what is your take on that?
My take on it is that that's probably the most detrimental question in the world is why. And it takes us out of the context of presence and just to see what is. And for sure there's an element of why when someone outside of the external environment is telling us to do something, we question why they're telling us to do something. But the simplicity of why we're here to live, we're here to breathe, we're here to experience life, and we're here to experience the freshness and the newness of the potentiality that comes. If you were to ask me if I have any goals of what I want to achieve, I would say that I want to just continue being more aware and watching what is happening. Mm-hmm. I feel that fear is not meant to be a paralytic element to stop us from doing things in life. It's just a simple signpost to be more aware. When something comes up we become fearful of, the more that we can take a breath and be present and look around, and then we understand there's less that the external environment has that it can inflict upon us, because where our awareness is seeing what's going on. It also can put us in a place of contracting, stopping, and not allowing life to reach us because we put up the protective barriers. Yeah. Because we think that the fear is here that to protect us from something outside, where ultimately it's just there to bring more awareness.
To show you what is important at that given moment, where to look at, where to bring more respect to a certain task or a challenge.
Yeah, that's like the fear of darkness. It's just the fear of the unknown. We don't know what's beyond there, but the more that we can breathe and be present, then it's kind of like the archetypical picture of the Buddhist monk in his Vipassana or in his lotus meditation, facing the demon that's about to eat him.
What is the very practical steps that one could take? Like, let's say people are listening and now feeling equally inspired as I am by your words and say, okay, but how? You know, there's so much going on in my everyday life, and how can I tap into that space that you were just describing, this awareness that you can face your fears with, listening to the sounds of nature, like out there, this little thingy that is like doing this funny sounds all the time. Or like you described the other day, I found that so cool, like the bird, when the sun is rising in the morning, when the birds get so excited and, oh, the sun is rising, the sun is rising. And this is how it sounds like, actually, right? The birds getting excited about the sun rising. And that is the sounds that you can hear. But I think it requires a certain amount of awareness to being able to interpret nature and what is going on like that. So back to the question, what is practical steps one could take in his everyday life if you want to embark on this and feel inspired?
Yeah, I think it's very easy to just assume, for example, for myself or for the listeners listening, that I have this easy, beautiful, just flowing life every day, but life still exists for me. The challenges, the conflicts, the pains, the struggles, they're all still there. And the practical day-to-day steps is to more and more each day realize what your priorities are and to make time for those priorities. And the first priority for me is always water and breath. And one of the practices I shared the other day is my first step is to take a glass of water. Usually have it sitting on my altar or by my bed, so when I wake up, it's the first thing that I do. And not just to drink it unconsciously, but just to hold it and to be clear with what I'm about to take in my body, because water is the most programmable cellular substance that we have in our bodies as life. It is the water is life. It's 80% of our being, and it can it makes up most of our body. And so it just brings me back to that place, no matter what my mind is saying first thing in the morning, whatever it's recalling from the day before, whatever problems or challenges I had with another or a conflict. It just brings me back to the center, back to the here and now, and says, well, this is a brand new moment. Let's start again. And it just sets that frequency.
Wow.
There's a mantra I kind of say that the frequency of the first hour of your day sets the tone for the rest of your life. So it's, you know, there's many practical steps, but I don't think it gets any more practical than just remembering how important your breath is.
Yeah.
And when the pressures of life come, no matter where they're coming from, that we know we can get through just by breathing and relieving the pressure through our breath, because it's taking in new life and letting go of the old.
Wow. Wow, that gives a whole new dimension to drinking water, to breathing. And I experienced for myself what it's like to really breathe consciously, really tap into that power that our breathing has. It not just supplies us with oxygen we need to live. It's life itself, right? We bring into our body the life force, the life energy. The more consciously we do that, the more we tap into that potential of life. It's beautiful. I could go on like this for hours talking to you. Kita, thank you so much for sharing your part of your life story, part of your experiences. It's kind of an intuitive question now, but is there anything more you would like to add to this conversation that you feel is important?
I think that you started asking this question at the beginning of the conversation about how we each find our unique individual voice.
Yes.
And beyond just music itself, our voice is the most important thing that we have to express ourselves in the world, whether it's through music or whether it's through sharing what we feel, whether it's expressing our opinion, whether it needs to be expressed or not. The biggest fear people have in the world is speaking their voice to be heard. We want to be heard. That's what we all want to be heard and listened to. And that's why many people tend to kind of tweak or adjust a little bit what they say just to make sure it's going to be received. Because if they say the wrong thing, then everybody will laugh at them or say, oh, you're so talk, come on, what do you mean? But it's the willingness to be able to... It's like we... Many people have this this recurring dream that we have, that we're in our primary school education and we're at the whiteboard or the chalkboard in the front of the class without any clothes on.
Oh yeah, that's what it felt like sometimes.
And it's like everybody's looking at us, they're looking at all of our parts and they're analyzing and they're laughing, and this is such a big trauma for humanity. But this is the most beautiful place, is to be vulnerable. And vulnerable meaning letting it all shine out and hang out, no matter what we love to do. If it's important enough for us to love to do it, then we can put it on the altar and hold it as that, as sacred. And like I mentioned the other day, it's like waking up in the morning like a bird and being so excited to live a new day of life that we just express. Doesn't matter what we're expressing. We're not expressing to get somebody's attention. We're not expressing to get someone's approval. We're expressing to express, because it's our gift that we have here as life to express. So in the simplest form, it's like, what if we want to say something and we're afraid that our first little expression of what we're going to say is a squeak or a bad sound or a gargle, or it's going to be too horrible to someone else's ears, who cares? And as long as it's moving through you and it's coming out, that is your expression, that's your gift. And we are, as a humanity, as a collective humanity, we are a big shining gem of a jewel, a diamond. But each facet of that diamond has its very intrinsic role. It has a very specific way that it shines. And if it didn't have that one uneven or specific cut to that diamond, then it wouldn't shine in brilliance like it can.
Right. Beautiful. That's a beautiful way to end this conversation. Thank you so much, Kita.
Pleasure.
I'd love to, you know, give an impression of what your music sounds like. If you agree, I would now play one of the songs I recorded at the Sound Healing.
That sounds beautiful. And yeah. I also was feeling that it could be very helpful if you feel to share another podcast that maybe includes the whole journey itself, for people just to take a moment and have that experience for themselves. Maybe or maybe not, that's a possibility. But,
to record another podcast, you mean?
Well, to have,
share one that already exists.
To share the experience that you had the other day of our sound journey, in its entirety from start to, or maybe an hour segment of it, or a special edition Sound Healing podcast.
That's a beautiful idea. That's a beautiful idea. I'll do that. I recorded it with this device, so we have it in very good sound quality. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll do that. Thank you, Kita. Pleasure to meet you.
And pleasure to meet you as well.
Namaste.
Safe journeys home.
Thank you.
And hope that you can bring what you've received here in this time in Bali to all the people you touch and each being you come in contact with.
I'll do my best. Thank you, Kita.
Und Kitas Angebot, einen Auszug aus seinem Sound Healing zu veröffentlichen und hier im Podcast mit euch zu teilen, mag ich sehr, sehr gerne annehmen. Nächste Woche gibt's dann also ein Special, auf das du dich richtig freuen kannst. Ich hoffe, die heutige Folge hat dir genauso viel Freude gemacht wie mir und dass du dich inspiriert fühlst und ermutigt, jeden einzelnen Ton deiner wunderschönen Musik in dir zum Klingen zu bringen, ganz unabhängig davon, wie gut oder nicht gut das anderen Menschen auch gefallen mag. Ich feiere deine Einzigartigkeit, wünsche dir eine schöne Woche und viel Mut und Freude bei deinen nächsten First Steps.